and pro-Palestine rallies have been held across the world, including the U.S. capital, Washington, D.C., to demand an immediate end to Israel's war on Gaza. Thanks for joining us. The death toll continues to mount in the Gaza Strip, which has been reeling from a month of relentless Israeli attacks and a tightened siege. According to media reports, in the latest round of Israeli strikes, at least 51 Palestinians have lost their lives in al-Maghazi refugee camp. Scores of people have also been wounded. Also, eyewitnesses say Israeli warplanes have once again used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs on the western and in the northern neighborhoods of Gaza City. This as Israel continues targeting medical facilities, schools, and civilian infrastructure. The total death toll of Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip has now surpassed 9,500, most of them women and children. More than 24,000 people have sustained injuries. The Hamas spokesperson has said that more than 60 of the group's captives are also missing due to Israeli strikes. All right, live in the Gaza Strip, the smoke is there. It's hazy, in other words, and perhaps we can get more of an idea from our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, who joins us from Khan Yunis to tell us more. Ashraf, at this point, we're looking at a death toll that's been steady. Has there been an increase there in terms of the number of people to have died or murdered in the past 24 hours, if you can give us an idea on that, and injuries, of course?
Well, an average about 300 to 400 people are killed every day in Gaza. So probably not by now, 11,000 to 12,000 people have been killed. The numbers that the Ministry of Health has been releasing are not accurate because they have no access to all data from entire Gaza Strip. Like, for example, you will have sometimes 200 to 300 people being killed in the southern part of Gaza, south of the Gaza Wadi, and the Ministry of Health in Gaza has no idea because of the problem with telecommunications, internet, and also cellular connection between the Palestinian governorates in the Gaza Strip. In addition to that, the fact that the Ministry of Health in Gaza is currently running from a Shifa hospital. Shifa hospital literally has no electricity, is being bombarded, areas around it. Israel has been attacking solar panels close to the hospital, electrical solar panels, and also attacking electrical generators. So they're disrupting their work. So then the data coming out of the Ministry of Health is definitely inaccurate. The numbers you hear, add another 1,000 to them at least. In addition to the fact, like, there are at least 2,000 people missing under the rubble, and some of those who are missing have actually their bodies are no longer exist because of the use of high explosives against the civilians, and so nothing remains of those people who were killed, and that's why a lot of people will be missing forever. In addition, the Hamas's military wing, the Zin Qassam Brigades, has said earlier today that it has captured two Israeli soldiers east of Khan Yunis near an area called Al Zanne. And I believe this will only agitate the Israeli regime forces, and will probably try and kill as much Palestinians as possible. They've been killing Palestinians left and right for 30 days now, and having two soldiers missing from or two soldiers captured alive, that's a huge problem for the Israeli regime. The main reason for them to go to this so-called ground invasion or ground incursion is to release those captive Israeli soldiers and settlers that Hamas fighters captured back on October 6th when they came into the border area and humiliated and defeated the Israeli forces. Now, with two Israeli soldiers missing, this is a huge problem for the Israeli regime, a huge problem for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Today, one of the massacres that took place today actually hit close to home, because in the Maghazi refugee camp, at least 50 people were killed during the bombing of the Maghazi refugee camp. And Maghazi refugee camp is south of the Gaza Wadi. A colleague of ours, his name is Muhammad Al-Alul, He lost four of his children. He works for the Anadolu News Agency, and the office is right across the street from our office. And we see him every day. We have coffee with him. And now he has lost his family. And this is part of the ongoing attack against the journalists in Gaza. At least 46 have been killed, along with maybe 200 family members.
You told us about the fact that you had one of the Israeli ministers talk about how the Gaza Strip should be bombed. We're looking at some news to come out of that. I'm wondering what you have for us in particular, for example, the reaction by Hamas, and also, what, I guess, fallout this has had, because in a sense it is Israel admitting that it does possess nuclear weapons.
Well, it was actually a big mistake by this Israeli minister, and this has infuriated Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that he had to kick him out of the cabinet meeting, literally kick him out. And news within the Israeli media say he started screaming at him, and he asked the security to escort him out of the room, because this is the first time in the Israeli regime's history that they that one of their ministers, acting minister, actually admits that they want to use a nuclear bomb. If you want to use a nuclear bomb, that means you have a nuclear arsenal. And so basically Israel today has admitting having a nuclear arsenal. Hamas has reacted to this by saying this is simply reflects the evil mindset of the Israeli regime that wants to terrorize Palestinians. But when I talk to people here at Nasser Hospital, even those who were injured, even those who lost their limbs, they would tell you it doesn't matter what they do. Even if they use a nuclear bomb or nitrogen bomb or hydrogen bomb, they will not be able to get rid of the Palestinian people.
Well, the interesting reaction that came on this is the fact that Israel has, in a sense, used a nuclear bomb, because it has, in increments, dropped so much bombs, so many bombs in the Gaza Strip, that it amounts to a nuclear bomb to have dropped on it.
Well, yes, the government media office in Gaza said a few days ago that the bombs and explosives used against Gaza during the last 27 days, 26 days, that was 3 days ago, is more than what the United States used in Hiroshima to kill tens of thousands of Japanese, innocent Japanese civilians.
All right, thank you for that. Ashraf Shahnder, talking to us from Khan Yunis. We do appreciate it. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas presses ahead with its ground operations against invading Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. Al-Qassam Brigade says that its fighters have killed more Israeli soldiers in northern Gaza. In a statement, it said that happened after its forces fired machine guns and bombs at a group of Israeli troops holed up in a building northwest of Gaza City. The group also said they destroyed 24 Israeli tanks, personnel carriers, and military vehicles in less than 24 hours. In addition, the group said it fired missiles towards Tel Aviv, Ashdod, Eilat, and other Israeli towns in retaliation for Israel targeting civilians in Gaza. More Palestinians fall victim to deadly Israeli violence in the occupied West Bank, amid ongoing bloodshed by the regime in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Health Ministry says Israeli forces killed two Palestinians in East Al-Quds and another in Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. In Al-Quds, the Israeli military destroyed a house by shelling it. An exchange of fire with Palestinians followed, leaving two of them dead and six wounded. The killings came after regime forces killed 10 in the occupied West Bank on Friday. Israeli forces have killed over 150 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7. That is when the regime began its onslaught against the besieged Gaza. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it attacked seven Israeli military positions. In a statement, the group said guided missiles and artillery were used to hit the targets. Hezbollah also said it shot down an Israeli spy balloon. Meanwhile, the Israeli army said it targeted several Hezbollah positions and an observation post. No casualties reported. This after Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah vowed on Friday that all options are open for an expansion of the conflict. Hezbollah's leader warned the U.S. that if Israel did not stop its assault on Gaza, conflict could widen into a regional war. Meanwhile, the diplomatic cost of Israel's atrocities in the Gaza Strip is mounting, with more countries now recalling their ambassadors to the regime. Turkey has become the latest country to recall its ambassador for consultations due to the humanitarian crisis and ongoing Israeli attacks on Gaza. This comes as Amman's foreign ministry has demanded the formation of an international court to investigate war crimes committed by Israel in Gaza. Also, Honduras has joined other Latin American countries to immediately recall its ambassador to Israel over what it called serious humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. Colombia and Chile have already recalled their ambassadors, with Bolivia cutting off diplomatic ties with Tel Aviv altogether. Malaysians have boycotted companies and goods with ties to the Israeli regime in a show of support for Palestinians. A list of firms with alleged ties to Tel Aviv are circulating on social media in Malaysia. Among them are American food franchises, as Washington continues its unconditional support for Tel Aviv. In the U.S., too, businesses with alleged ties to Israel are being boycotted. Philadelphia, in the state of Pennsylvania, is just one of the cities where dozens of businesses have been the target of pro-Palestinian boycotts. This comes as activists have taken to social media to join the worldwide anti-Israeli boycott campaign and to expose how some multinational companies help sustain the Israeli occupation of Palestine and acts of aggression against Palestinians. Let's find out what Mick Napier thinks. He's a co-founder of the Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who joins us from Edinburgh. Mick Napier, welcome. So it seems like BDS is indeed rebooted, and it looks like the principles of it are being applied by pro-Palestine, either businesses or people in general, people who don't want to buy or are boycotting products from Israel, and, of course, the ones that are selling it. Do you think that this is going to gain traction and a momentum, or is it just limited to the time that this war is ongoing?
No, I think when you look at the record of the growth in influence and strength of the international BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, it doesn't grow in a sort of regular curve. It grows by leaps. The massacre of the Turkish solidarity people on the Mavi Marmara, a 2008-9 massacre, Operation Cast Lead, 2014. In each of these atrocious Israeli crimes, the BDS movement grows by a big leap. Nothing is going to be bigger than this one, because it's important to know and to understand that Israel, in terms of Western public opinion, I don't mean what governments say, is a polecat state and has always been a polecat state since 2000. Every measure of public opinion shows that Israel is in a deep crisis because it's widely despised and reviled in terms of public opinion. And support for Israel, by the way, in terms of European public opinion, is vanishingly small. And this is so extreme, there's such an extreme dissonance between public opinion and our rulers, that many years ago, a spokesman for the European Union, Franco Frattini, apologized to Israel for the opinions of Europeans that his office had measured, and promised that those opinions would not influence EU policy towards Israel. So that's been the reality for a long time. But now there's a spasm of rage surging through large sections of Western public opinion. I don't want to exaggerate it, but it's very, very, very strong among a very, very large minority of the population. And the majority of the population, as measured here in Scotland, favour an immediate ceasefire and an end to the Israeli aggression. So I think Israel had long, on October the 6th, before the current crisis, had already become a pariah state, was already had a crisis in terms of public opinion, and they knew they had a crisis. The ambassador to Britain, when he left for the UN, Ron Prosser, signaled in an article that there was a deep crisis in terms of public opinion, and he warned the British elite that if that continued and became stronger, it could pose a threat to the cozy relations that they had with corporate and political Britain. So, yes, we see the barbarism on TV. The fact that this creature threatened the use of nuclear weapons against the people of Gaza. He shouldn't have said that in public. That should be just for private discussions. But this is just the horror on top of the horror that is driving people to find out new ways to boycott and isolate the state of Israel. But there's also an awareness that our government is so complicit, sending weapons, diplomatic support, trying to shut down support for Palestine in Britain, that we must escalate. And that it's not enough. BDS is vital, but it's a slow burn. We need to disrupt society. We need to impose a cost on those who want society to run normally. And we see already railway stations being occupied, normal business not being possible, and huge demonstrations outside the British broadcast, the BBC, because it's simply parroting Israeli propaganda. So yes, I think there's a huge change. I think it's accelerated a long-term change underway, which is never reversed. Although Israel can spend hundreds of millions of shekels on public relations and the Palestinians virtually nothing, the tide of public opinion only goes in one direction, and this will accelerate that drive. There's increasing support for the resistance. There's increasing awareness that our government is capable of anything. People think that if this government can support what Israel is doing in Gaza, they can support anything. The barbarians are not just in Tel Aviv, they're in the London government as well, and in Washington. So yes, to answer your question, BDS will grow, but other forms of resistance to our government, which invaded Iraq and devastated it, and bombed Libya and devastated it, supplied massive weaponry to Saudi Arabia to devastate Yemen, that we have it's like a serial killer. And although Israel is a major part of that, it's a bigger issue. We have to prevent our government. It's like a heroin addict which cannot break the habit of causing devastation and suffering all across the Middle East.
All right, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mick Napier talking to us there. Thank you so much, co-founder of the Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Back to Aperture, everyone. In the first part of the documentary, we met the hidden victims of America's multi-billion dollar chemical industry. By offering an excellent wage and a comfortable retirement package, chemical giants Dow Chemical and DuPont factories are welcome wherever they go. For many of the town's residents, a job at Dow Chemical or DuPont marks the beginning of a very glimmering future. Yet, victims like Alice, Kenton, and Rukna have seen the ugly truth behind this prosperity. Don't go away. Here's the rest of our program.
850 children are now registered at Rashida B's center. In 2015, Dow gave $4.5 billion to its shareholders, but not a single cent has been given to the decontamination of Bhopal. For weeks, we tried to reach the communications department at Dow to get an interview, without success.
The water that people drink.
Who's going to answer those questions? It's really important.
I'm not aware of who that is right off the top of my head. We have 50,000 employees, so I'll have to do some research.
Dow never called us back. So we decided to go to the company's General Assembly in Midland, in the U.S., to ask our questions. A few days later, we finally received an email from Dow. The company laments, "Bhopal was a terrible tragedy that we will never forget." But they relieved themselves of all responsibility, stating that, "We acquired Union Carbide more than 16 years after the catastrophe of 1984.
Dow continues to address global issues through human solutions. Issues like clean water, as important as life itself. Dow is working to make water safe and readily available to people all over the globe. The human element. Nothing is more fundamental. Nothing more elemental."
In Dow's wake, countless victims and human tragedies pile up without any damage to the company's profits. In December 2015, Dow announced the biggest financial operation in its history. A merger of $130 billion with another American chemical giant, DuPont. A match made in heaven.
You and DuPont, there's a lot of good chemistry between us.
DuPont made its fortune with dynamite.
Dynamite!
Nylon. And Teflon. The magical material that prevents food from sticking to pans. However, behind the success of Teflon, DuPont hides a dark secret.
I just can't believe that DuPont, the money means more than people.
There's people dying because of what they've done.
DuPont knew years ago what they were doing.
At best, it's despicable. At the worst, it's criminal.
At the heart of this drama is one city, Parkersburg. Lost in the eastern U.S. The city was built around the DuPont factory. Suzanne Bailey came here in 1978 to work on the Teflon production lines.
I went to work in May the 8th, 1978. That was my glorious day. That was the elite job. I mean, everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, and everything like that. It was secure.
The chemical industry is a growing one, growing by leaps and bounds.
I mean, you could just mention the DuPont name and doors swung open. It was like princes coming through the door, you know?
Yes, in such an environment, you can look to a bright future with confidence and optimism.
Were you happy, sir?
I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled to death.
A few months after starting her job at DuPont, Suzanne Bailey became pregnant. In January of 1981, she gives birth to little Bucky.
When he was born, it was very traumatic. They didn't know what to do with him. They'd never seen anything like it. I could not figure out what happened. He had half a nostril, half a nose, the eye as a keyhole pupil. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid he was going to die in my arms. I had no idea what was wrong.
Bucky survived. He is now 35 years old. But his childhood was spent between his home and the hospital.
I had 30 surgeries in a span of, you know, 6 to 7 years, where they took rib cartilage to form my nose. I have a metal plate here. They stretched my forehead out so that they could use that skin and bring it down and mold my nose here. I still only have one nostril, functioning nostril.
We had to put the hockey mask on him and the guards because he wasn't allowed to touch his face.
For how long?
He had to wear those for, I would say, 3 months, 4 months.
It's a long time.
Yeah, the only way that he got to take him off was just to eat.
How is it as a kid to grow up and to have, you know, so many surgeries? And I mean, it's pretty intense, you know.
Walking out in public and going into a store or a restaurant, and as soon as you enter, all the eyes are on you. And school, when you go in and you're trying to make new friends, all they see is you're different.
After her maternity leave, Suzanne Bailey began to suspect her job as the cause of Bucky's deformities. A mysterious source tips her off to one molecule in particular, C8, the molecule in Teflon that stops food from sticking to pans.
When I went back to work the first day, I went to the locker and I found the paper laying there. I picked it up and I began reading about it. It was talking about how the rats were fed the C8 and what deformities that it had around their face. And I thought, that sounds just like Bucky.
It was very similar to what Bucky had.
Absolutely. Very similar, almost identical to what he had. That's why I knew that there was something wrong. That's why I connect.
The scientific study Suzanne Bailey found had been conducted by a subcontractor of DuPont. It studied baby rats whose mothers were exposed to C8. They developed abnormal eye lenses.
I immediately walked out that door, went down to medical, and I said, is this what's wrong with my baby? Oh, no, no, no. Nothing on this planet will hurt you. That was the motto. That's what they always say.
Yeah.
Nothing here will hurt you.
But in the meantime, DuPont was secretly investigating the pregnant women working in their factory. 2 out of 7 children born to the factory workers had facial deformities like Bucky. Shortly after, DuPont decided to transfer Suzanne Bailey and her colleagues to other departments. At the time, Kenton Wamsley also worked in the manufacturing department of Teflon. He remembers the discussion he had with his manager.
He said, Ken, we sent all the women home out of Teflon, all of them. He said, oh, don't worry. It won't hurt the men, just the women. We feel that it can cause trouble. So I thought, it won't hurt me.
Kenton Wamsley was a lab technician. He handled C8 for 30 years.
Breathe the fumes from them, all the samples we breathe. But we just, you know, at the time, we thought DuPont would take care of us. And so I just did my jobs for years and years, you know. And we didn't realize it. Our health was an issue then. Surgeon diagnosed me as having cancer. He had to take all my rectum, part of my colon.
Now Kenton Wamsley has to live with an ostotomy bag attached to his stomach. He changes it day and night. At the factory, he worked in a team with 3 other technicians.
My buddies, people I really love, seen them every day, cared about them. Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. They didn't even see retirement, none of them.
Wamsley and his colleagues were never warned about the risks of C8. However, we procured a confidential document from DuPont. It's dated 1982, 34 years ago. In it, Mr. Rector at the time expresses concern about the consequences of C8 retained in the blood of employees. He specifically recommends that practical steps be taken to reduce this exposure.
All employees, not just Teflon area workers, are exposed. So rather than to do anything, they just wrote it out. I've never seen a letter like that. I'm mad. You can see why. We could have prevented a lot of lies if they would have told us there's a problem. Why'd they cover it up? Why'd they lie? Why didn't they have us protected? Too costly?
We tracked down Bruce Carr, DuPont's former medical director. he is now enjoying a peaceful retirement by the ocean, far from Parkersburg.
I have a document of 1982 showing that you were aware that C8 was toxic for workers. Why have you not told them the truth at that time?
They were all told the truth. They were told everything we knew at the time.
Actually, no. I have interviewed some employees and they were not aware of anything.
We told employees everything we knew as soon as we knew it. You go back to 1982, you're trying to do reconstructions. History. And you can't do that.
Why have you not protected your employees? Il a raccroché.
DuPont would not only put their employees in danger. Once again, tens of thousands of people would be affected. They live up to 70 kilometers away from the factory. One man would discover this, a bit by accident. Joe Kiger. On October 31st, 2000, he receives a letter from the municipality concerning the quality of the tap water. It mentions C8.
I was sitting in my courtyard and the wife was watering the flowers and we got our water bill in the mail. And with that bill came a letter. It's like you get form letters all the time. So you look and say, oh, okay, bang. You put it over and you don't think about it. Next thing you know, you throw it away. And that's basically what this was. It just caught my attention and I started reading through it and then the flag started popping up. First of all, what was C8 here, mm-hmm. which is used by DuPont Works? Well, what's DuPont have to do with our water?
Joe Kiger sought clarification on the matter.
I called DuPont to try to find out. So they put me in touch with a guy, a gentleman named Mr. Kennedy. And I said, you know, I'd like to know more about this C8 issue. He just told me it's nothing to worry about. About it was just a byproduct of Teflon, and it wasn't anything to worry about. I mean, he was flat out lying to me, I could tell that.
To get to the bottom of it, he takes DuPont to court. After a long legal battle, the judge forces the company to declassify their internal studies on C8. Joe Kiger discovers the truth behind the factory at Parkersburg. For decades, they've been dumping C8 waste into the river. To make things worse, DuPont has known since 1984 that the molecule spread into the region's tap water. The company found astronomical levels in public taps, up to 50 times the limit of toxicity, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
That was 1984, and we didn't come out till 2000.
So with 16 years.
Yeah, before we even hit them up about it. And they chose, as you see right here, they chose not to do anything about it. And they knew what was coming with the liabilities if they got caught. They were trying to slide under the radar. People trusted DuPont for so long. They have done nothing but lie for years to people about what this stuff's all about. There's sick people out here because of what they've done. There's people dying because of what they've done.
During all these years, more than 70,000 people have been drinking contaminated water. In 2011, both scientific research and the U.S. justice system established that C8 could cause six diseases: thyroid disorder, high cholesterol, ulcerative colitis, high blood pressure, kidney cancer, or testicular cancer. Today, 3,500 people in the Parkersburg region are ill. They've all filed complaints against DuPont. This is the case for Earl and Gwen Botkin.
I've had ulcerative colitis for about 17 years, and it's about killed me a couple times. I still have thyroid problem, and I have high cholesterol. And those are all associated with C8.
Today, Earl Botkin doesn't have a colon anymore. He, too, is living with an ostomy bag.
So all of a sudden, you don't function normally, but you have your bowel movement on your side. And that's what I'll live with until I die. And there's not any hope of that's going to change. It controls where I go, what I do, and what I eat. And just controls a lot of things in my life. But anyway, I lived through that.
A document reveals that all of these victims could have been spared. On May 22, 1984, a meeting took place at the DuPont headquarters. The directors are worried about the consequences for the inhabitants. They plan to eliminate all C8 emissions. But finally, no measures are taken. Their argument, it's not economically attractive.
That was in what year?
84. That's before we were married. That's a long time ago. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago.
That's crazy. That's what makes it so bad, you know, that they had evidence all along and just disregarded it and kept doing what they were doing.
It was company greed that caused this whole situation. They knew what they were doing to us, and they continued to do it for money. That's the only reason they continued to do it.
DuPont refuses to collectively compensate the 3,500 sick people. They prefer to study the cases one by one. As a result, since 2012, only one victim has been able to get a trial. DuPont was sentenced to pay her $1.6 million. The 3,499 remaining victims, like Earl Botkin, are still waiting. At the current pace of the trials, the last one would take place in 100 years.
Do you still trust and you're still confident that you will get a trial at some point?
Oh.
She lives long enough.
If I live to be 150, I might. There will be a trial someday. But the chances of me living long enough to ever see that are probably slim to none. But we're just another document, another number of cases to be tried. DuPont has made billions of dollars. I think they should stand up to what they've done and make it right with the people they've made sick.
DuPont refused all of our requests for an interview, so we drove to their headquarters in Delaware on the East Coast to convince them to answer our questions. At the other end of the line, we reach the head of media relations, Daniel Turner.
We are doing a documentary piece. The best way is, you know, we meet and to make a proper interview, you know, at some point. But first, let's meet. You know, I'm just here.
We'll respectfully decline the on-camera interview. I will provide you with a statement.
You know, there is like an incredible amount of documents showing that you have known at DuPont for the past 30 years that C8 was toxic. And you know that you were poisoning your employees at the Washington Works plant and the Parkersburg citizen. Why are you not recognizing the fact that you have deliberately poisoned thousands of persons?
Okay, so are those the questions you're asking?
Yeah, this is my questions.
Okay, I'll be happy to provide with our statement.
Today, we are in 2016. There are still 3,500 persons with severe disease that are waiting to just have the right to get a trial. I mean, for how long are you going to deny your responsibility? Are you waiting that they all die?
So, we will provide you with a statement for your piece.
Nothing else? No?
Like I said, we will provide you with a statement. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
We did receive a press release from DuPont, but without a single word for the victims. They claim to have studied C8 carefully for decades and affirm to have always acted responsibly. In 2015, DuPont finally stopped using C8. The company was also ordered by the courts to clean up the region. But how many generations are still to experience the after effects of this contamination? In the chemical world, history inexorably tends to repeat itself. It takes decades to reveal the truth, and just as many years for the multinationals to be prosecuted. In their laboratories, new toxic molecules are constantly being developed. But in 10, 20, 30, or 40 years, who knows how many new victims will be poisoned?
Merged together, Dow Chemical and DuPont create the world's largest chemical company in terms of sales. Yet, the victims' testimonies, those whose lives have been poisoned, will forever cast a shadow over this industry as they fight in the hope that someday their culprits will be brought to justice. And that's it for this week, everyone. Join us next time for another documentary. It's goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
کتاب الله
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق
The Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to Arab English Radio. You're listening to For a Better Life. I am Bita, and once again, I have the chance and honor to be at your service to share my opinions, ideas, and things based on Islamic books with you to think more about ways and approaches to a better life. As you know, in the last episode, we talked about the concept of Allah Almighty, concept of soul, and these questions actually posed by these atheist people and some randomized people. In this episode, we're going to talk about the unity of God. Say, He's Allah, the one and only. One of the verses of Holy Quran, which is one of the most important principles of Islam. You may have this question, how these actually things that we're talking in this episode are relevant to having a better life? I have to tell you that. The first step to do something, the first step to go for something is to know more about it. So if you want to have a better life, you have to know how to do that. Okay, and these little things that we're talking in these several episodes together are pieces of puzzles that when bringing together, they will make a miracle in everybody's life. You know, the short surah of the Holy Quran, the surah 112, is the most significant of all writings dealing with the oneness of God. As Allama Abdullah Yusuf Ali has commented in his translation of the Holy Book, the nature of God has been indicated here in a few words, such as we can understand. He writes here, we are specifically taught to avoid the pitfalls into which men and nations have fallen various times in trying to understand God. The first thing we have to note is that His nature is so sublime, so far beyond our limited conceptions, that the best way in which we can realize Him is to feel that He is a personality. He, and not a mere abstract conception of philosophy, okay? You have to keep that important point in mind that Allah Almighty is a persona, you know? This is not an abstract thing of philosophy. Nowadays, when you go talk and chit-chat with young generation, and I have to add this point that I'm from this young generation too, you feel like they are, you know, misunderstanding everything with philosophic concepts. And they want to actually mislead you. They want to disrupt you from the mere and simple fact of the meaning of Allah Almighty, the meanings that we were talking about, and specifically the inner voice, that we have a lot to say about this specific content. So, secondly, He is the one and only God, the only one to whom worship is due. All other things or beings that we can think of are His creatures and in no way comparable to Him. Thirdly, He is eternal, without beginning or end, absolute, not limited by time or place or circumstance. The reality before which all other things or places are mere shadows or reflections. One of the reasons that people try to deny all of the facts that deep in their heart they know that they are true is the fact that the concept of Allah Almighty is so beyond our understanding, beyond our limitations, that we compare ourselves, our creation, to Allah Almighty, and because we are limited to time, to place, to circumstances, to the outer world, we feel like there should be something like us, okay? So, this is one of the biggest reasons of denial throughout the history. Fourthly, we must not think of Him as having a son or father, for that would be to import animal qualities into our conception of Him. And fifthly, He is not like any other person or thing that we know or can imagine. His qualities and nature are unique. Allah Almighty is unique, and this uniqueness can be really difficult to understand. And, you know, this whole concept that we're talking about remind me this beautiful quote, narration from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that he says you can think about everything but nature of Allah Almighty, because you can never understand this nature, you can never understand this meaning and concept. So sometimes this overthinking about these kind of ideas and concepts that are over and beyond our understanding can lead to sins, can lead to emptiness and all the philosophical aspects that we are aware of. These things that I mentioned, all of them, are a declaration of war against all ideas of denial that we can see through human beings. Men from the beginning have had a tendency to imagine God in their own image, like God is a creature, like God is, you know, something you can touch, something you can see. And this is a tendency from the beginning of existence of human being. Some thought of him as having body like animals or human beings. Others thought that he was incarnated in the forces of nature like rain, lightning, mountain, river, sun. And still, others thought that he was a father and had child or children. But in Islamic education, there is this warning against this tendency to conceive God after our own patterns. Let's keep it here, go for a short break, then I'm going to come back.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need. It's
all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh,
your love is all I need.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to For a Better Life. We were talking about the concept of Allah Almighty and how it is connected to having a better life. Don't forget that sometimes this word of life will remind you of the life that you are living on earth. But this is not it. There is this afterlife, after death, which is actually the main phase of your life. And whenever we're talking about having a better life, both this materialistic life and a spiritual life after death, which we actually call it as afterlife, are considered here. As I mentioned, we talked about the uniqueness of Allah Almighty and the oneness of Allah Almighty. Unity, uniqueness, and oneness that are the qualities that are really important to understand, because these are the principles of all Islamic education that you have to follow. And after believing, thinking on, and understanding these principles, okay, you have to go for the next steps, which is working on your self-knowledge, self-awareness, and these sort of things. So to wrap the things up, I'm going to tell you that there are some tendencies in human beings which are completely natural. This is from your nature and fitrah, these tendencies that we have in ourselves, like tendency to image Allah Almighty as we understand. But you have the power and you have the will to go against these tendencies and to actually think on whatever you are doing and whatever you are believing based on full intellect. So this step is necessary, and then you can go for doing good things, doing good deeds, and having a better life. So I wish for all of us here, me and you, dear listeners, to have a meaningful life, seeking for knowledge, seeking for peace, and having a strong bond with Allah Almighty. Thank you for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand
in every desert land,
he knows.
Every shade of palm,
every closed hand,
he knows.
Every sparkling tear
on every eyelash,
he knows.
Every thought I have
and every word I share,
he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Mm-hmm.
lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you. My roots, Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Sing some of thee inside my aching heart, some of thee inside our land. Our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinians, most of them women and children, in Gaza during its month-long relentless attacks on besieged territory. Palestinian resistance forces say that they have destroyed at least 24 Israeli tanks and armored vehicles as a ground battle rages on in the besieged enclave.